Hey Podnuts, Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
Welcome to PODNUTS Daily, episode number 405, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Alish. I'm joined today by Paco LeBron from prodigytechs.com. Hey, Paco, how you doing?
Hey, Jeff. Doing good, doing good. It's a little cold over here as usual, but, you know, what can you do?
Exactly. You're right across the water from me, so I definitely understand. I had a little sprinkling of snow today, and just a little bit of white, but it's kind of weird to see the white on the ground and leaves in the trees. So it's a little too soon for snow, but it's already here.
Yep, I agree. And then Northern Illinois actually got a heap of snow that they were just shoveling. So it's pretty out there, man.
Oh, yeah, I'm not a I was a snow person when I was a kid. I am no longer a snow person. I can't stand it.
Yep. Because you probably drive, that's why.
Exactly.
Yep, exactly.
So we've had you on the show before, and actually you've been on a couple of the shows. What kind of things did you want to talk about today? You said you're doing some new things in your business and kind of making some adjustments and some reevaluations, which in my personal opinion, I think is really good, because it's something I'm always trying to do in my business, is personally evaluate where my business is going, how I can improve it, what changes do I need to make? You know, how many changes should I make at a time, you know, at this time, and so on and so forth. So I'm interested to see what kind of process you're going through right now to figure out what the next step for your business is.
Gotcha. Yeah. So kind of from what, when we talked last, we were in the kind of at the peak of getting everything ramped up, trying out new software, getting those services, trying to get at least off the ground and get into a good flow of meeting our customers' needs. Now, what we've come to know is, now that we've kind of finally passed that peak of, now we've got the clients coming in, now we kind of figured out we got a full 4 year, because we actually started officially back in February of 2013. So this past year we're actually going to have our first kind of full year, or full 2 years, to kind of figure out what we're doing. So what we've decided is, basically with any business, you have to kind of take a step back and realize, now that you've gotten yourself off the ground, you have all these great services, how do you make yourself more efficient? How do you make yourself kind of build that process, so that way, to help remove you from the process, so you can invest your time in the business, and then also have yourself or have somebody else kind of take that cookie cutter process and kind of do it for you. Because again, I started off as a one man shop. And then basically I expanded out to all those locations, and you can only do so much by yourself. So that's where, when you start to kind of take a look back, seeing what you could do efficiently, such as automated processes, are you in the position to add more people for you, or just develop new partnerships with other people and to help build your make your business grow? Sometimes you realize people are just not a good fit for your business. Sometimes you realize that there are other better opportunities for your business to help flourish. And that's kind of what we've done here as well. We've gone ahead and evaluated a lot of great new software that was available to us, and we started doing our hankering down and figuring out our business processes and kind of standardizing a lot of things. So that's where we're at the present moment. And right now it's kind of a really interesting time, because now that we've reaching our end of our year, we're starting to find out, where do we need to invest in the most? What part of our investments actually was worth it to us, and where can we invest in the future to get us to that next step in our business?
Well, that's really good. Now, some of the things, you know, because these are the things I think about all the time. Now, have you started putting down different processes of, like, let's say, virus removals on paper, or, you know, on a digital paper, you know, Microsoft Word or whatever, so that as you're bringing in employees or even partners and stuff like that, that you can go, hey, here's how we do this here. Because this is one of the things I'm always concerned about, is I want to put down all these processes on paper so that I can pass it off to somebody as I'm growing my business and it's saying, here's how I do it. Now, the thing is, those processes are constantly changing for me because what seemed to work at one point, I'm constantly changing those things. And I'm starting, like you said, starting to use different pieces of software to, you know, bring the automation to my business and make it more, more efficient.
Yep. So exactly like you said. So the beginning part for every technician is trying to find what's going to be that software or suite of software or that you're going to use to help benefit yourself. Once you've kind of figured out what you like, what works best for you, whether it be individual tools, one tool that has a suite of tools inside of it, then you start standardizing your process. What I actually do is I actually use Google Docs. And Google Docs allows me to, because my business is built on the Google Apps platform, which that possibly may change, but that has really helped us a lot because of all their suite of apps that they had available to us. And our Google Docs allows us to do that online collaboration like you mentioned. So, for example, if, as we write out those steps to kind of standardize our process, if something does change, rather than just having one sheet of paper, we can actually go ahead and update that Google Doc. And this is basically as a form of a wiki per se. But the fact that, as you mentioned, you have to keep up with it. And that's with anything, because within this industry, you do have to keep up. So that's one of those trades where, again, you have to figure out, are you going to be the one responsible for doing that? Or do you assign that to some other person or outsource that to help you benefit your business? And then you figure out your time to invest as well. But as you mentioned, standardizing that process has been the next step, and doing an online collaboration tool that we've used, we found very helpful and has been really influential for a lot of people that we have here.
Oh, no, that's really good. So yeah, using Google Docs and being that you can collaborate with your, because not everybody's always going to be close and stuff like that. You know, in this online world, we can do a lot of things and be very far from each other and still working together. And plus you've got that, basically you've got that information in the cloud, like you said, kind of a wiki type thing, where it's available to everybody that's on your team, which is good. Now, do you find it's easy to come up with the processes, or is it, cause I always find it for myself, I always find it hard. You know, I'll start to sit down and kind of write something out and go, okay, here's how I kind of do it. Instead of going through the process while maybe I'm working on a machine, because all I'm interested in really at that time is just working on a machine. So right. I'm not really interested in documenting my process. But what have you found is the best way to kind of do those types of things?
Kind of like what you mentioned is you kind of get into a mode of fixing the PC. So it's kind of hard to stop, figure out what you do and as far as the process. What really helped me out was another co-host of yours happens to say, I don't make mistakes, I make learning experiences. So the learning experiences help you kind of build those processes. And a perfect example is, you know, I was one of the early techs that would just, hey, my computer's slow, I don't know what's going on. Oh, might be malware or virus. In the middle of doing that virus or malware scan or reinstalling Windows, you get an error. Find out the hard drive's bad. So because of that experience, I now know to do my hardware scans up front. Yeah, right. It takes a little bit of time, but that's why we, you know, and depending on the business, I actually went the route of changing my billing format of hourly to flat rate pricing. That way it's not an open-ended bill to the customer, and the flat fees allow us the time that we need and a better interaction that we have with the customer, so they're not looking at the clock, worrying about what we're doing. But a lot of those learning experiences have helped us build our process. And also from a lot of the community, the PodNuts community, Tech Vets is another podcast that has really helped us, the industry and so forth before. But a lot of listening to other people's experiences, and not just on the podcast, you know, other colleagues of mine, things of that nature, you kind of help develop and kind of think outside the box, because it's one of those where if you have more eyes on a specific problem or a specific idea, you kind of open up and find out things or, you know, realize things that you didn't think about before. So a lot of the learning experiences and just, you know, with other colleagues and listening to other sources and kind of catching up on mediums, forums, things of that nature, that has helped us kind of standardize our processes along with other people that have their, you know, documentations, you know, Bryce's business kit, I know, has helped out with a lot of documentation for work orders and things of that nature to kind of standardize that process. But for the specific virus scans and things of that nature, for us, more of the learning experiences and just with our colleagues have really helped us develop our processes, at least to get through to pass it on to another technician to kind of get an idea of what's going on.
Oh, very good. Yeah, because I always, you know, I think about even my kids as they're coming up in the business and you know, I want to teach them, you know, I need to have that process in place that I use so they can do it exactly like me. And not saying that my way is the only way, but you got to have that base. You got to have that standard that you start from. And once you go from there, then if you need to make little tweaks in things here and there, you can go ahead and do that. Yep. So yeah, no, this is really good. And I'm just thinking about, you know, that's a good point about doing the hardware checks, because I think we've all gone through that where we basically are running a machine and we're trying to fix it and we haven't gone through a checklist. And here's the funny thing. I have checklists from the computer business kit, you know, Bryce's kit over or TechNibble kit. And basically there's checklists there. And you know how many times I pull them out and actually use them?
Right.
Zero, you know, and it's in there. And a lot of that stuff is already there. All I need to do is, hey, did I update Adobe Reader? Did I update Adobe Flash? Whatever, you know, all these different things we do on a machine, whether it's a cleanup or a reinstall, you know, I've got to sit there and mentally think about what I did or didn't do. And I've got the customer coming over and I go, oh, wait a minute. And I got to boot their machine back up, go back in. Oh, no, I didn't. So now I got to download that. And it's like you need to have that solidified process so that you're doing the same thing each and every time, you know?
Yep. And the reason why I say right to what you were saying is how many times you pulled out, because it happens to all of us. I mean, we have the resources and available in a certain medium that is just not sometimes convenient for us.
Right.
Sometimes we're just in the mode and we're just, bird nosing right in to try and get that problem done, or it's not available to us readily. That's why as you as a business owner or you as a technician have to figure out what works best for you. I have a buddy of mine, fellow technician. He hates anything paper. and he literally records himself doing certain checklists. And what he'll do is he will literally pull up his tablet and hit play. And that's his checklist. He will go through from everything that he set a time aside to build out these checklists or, you know, these steps to get things done. And that's his medium. He has his tablet right on his desk or his phone. He saves the video on his Google Drive or OneDrive. I can't remember what platform he's on. He hits play and that's how he follows on. He's not reading. It works for him. You know, other people may have audio. They may have just, you know, they put a couple earbuds in and they kind of flow into their form. It's really up to the technician on what medium is best for them. Because again, like you mentioned, Bryce's business kit, amazing source of resource. But sometimes we need to transform those resources so that it will help us in our time or for how we need them in that. So basically for me, I usually have, like I mentioned, I use Google Docs. Those documents are converted right there. So I have Google Drive on my phone and Google Sheets and Google Write. I just pop that on, take a look, and that's how I can pull his list or his sheet for me. Now, for everybody else, that may not be a viable solution. But there are other ways to help them become a better and efficient technician. Perfect example, like you mentioned, you know, forgetting about those updates. Well, there's Nynite that can allow you to do, you know, taking out the time to hear about that company, knowing that they can help make things efficient. If you have a standard way of doing things like me, I have several programs and several updates that I always run. I have an installer for that. Sometimes you may have a custom client for a business client that may have one of those items that you don't need updated because, you know, proprietary software, et cetera. Then I go ahead and click in, uncheck that, but et cetera. But knowing those certain tools and being able to help yourself, again, finding those mediums to help you become a more efficient technician always help in the end. And it's just how once you have those resources, because the resources are out there, it's the fact of how you're going to mold them to best fit your needs.
You know, those are all good points. And I'm just thinking back to the things that I'm just learning now in, you know, using things like Repair Shopper. which is my ticketing tool of choice at this point.
And, Beautiful software.
Too. Oh, yeah, it's great. And it's a cloud solution. But here's the thing. I had to break myself of the habit where I would get a, I would have the computer business kit, you know, work order. I'd have the customer come in, fill out the top portion with their information, sign, you know, sign the, you know, legal document on the back. Boom, done. And I would take that and I take their computer and I go to start to work on it. I had to break myself of that habit. And I actually now, before I even start working on the computer, I come to my portal for Repair Shopper and I input the information. I input the serial number. I input what type of computer it is. I input detailed information about what they said was wrong with it. I do a diagnosis. So there's a list of things that I'm doing to this computer along every step of the way. So guess what? Because here's what happened in the past. A customer would call and say, I don't know if you remember me or not, but you fixed my computer like 2.5 years ago. Yeah, no, not really. but, you know, because I didn't really have, I mean, I had information, but it was all in a file below my desk in a file folder. So now I can go in, I can type in the customer's name. They pop up. I can see what I worked on. I can see the computer I worked on. Oh, yeah, 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 I remember you. You know, and so it gives you that information that you can deal with the customer, you know, better than you were in the past where you're like, oh, no, I don't know. It was like 2.5 years ago. I don't know.
Right.
So.
Yep. And that's a good point that you bring that up. You know, I had a job probably, I don't know, probably about a year ago, year and a half ago, where same situation. You are a similar situation where a computer came in. I repaired it. When I was repairing the machine, I noticed that they had a bad drive. On my part, it was a bad assumption for me to assume that the customer knew they had a bad drive. So I knew the bad drive, the computer had a bad drive. The customer knew that the computer had a bad drive. But once I did the repair, which was replacing a hard drive and put everything back together, when I send it back to them, they reported, hey, my CD-ROM drive is not working and it was working before. I know when I received the computer, it did not. So it's one of those where with Repair Shopper, once you do that diagnosis, you can list out all those items and show that you contacted the customer and them replying back saying, no, don't worry about replacing that. I know about that. Or, oh, really? I didn't know that that was the case. Yeah, go ahead and repair it. Now you've covered yourself in writing and to the point where now you're not stuck into the part. Now, granted, a CD-ROM drive is $5, but hey, you never know. There's like there was a couple of people on the previous podcast that mentioned, hey, what if they have two machines, same type of machines that come in and now they want to get another type of repair, or, you know, the video line, you know, lines are coming up on the screen when, you know, for a fact, when you had the machine, it wasn't the case, but it's an onboard video. So now you got to replace the motherboard because you didn't notice that at that time or you assumed, et cetera. So what those type of things help with having that ticketing system. And like you mentioned, being able to break off of some of those old processes into the new ones to help better protect you as a tech as well.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the things that, you know, there are tools out there and there are a lot of inexpensive to even free tools that can help you in this process. You just have to find out what's going to work for you. And the bottom line is it's like every Franklin planner that was ever made. It's the only way those things help you is if you input information into them. If you're not going to input information into them, you're not going to get anything out of it. So,
yep, and I had one of those too.
Exactly, we all have. Yeah. The little Palm Pilots and everything else. And, you know, hey, that's a great $300, you know, calculator that, yeah, it has a to-do list on it, which I never look at. So, yeah, you definitely got to break yourself of those habits. But so some of the things that you're – where are you? Where do you see your business going? Where do you see your business growing? And what types of changes and things are you doing to your business right now?
Gotcha. Yeah. So what we've done is there's a couple things that we've actually changed recently. We are now moving toward a model where right now we actually have three locations where we service the northern suburbs of Illinois or in the Chicagoland area, along with our downtown Chicago area. Our point is what we're trying to do is we're trying to expand into a network that our services are going to be available nationwide. So I'm fortunate where my COO and our relationship with another company has techs available to us and a network where we can actually – more of a white label service where we can actually – put ourselves as being a nationwide company. So we're actually gearing toward actually having on-site, on the foot, and drop-off locations with the company that we're using for our proxy locations in Illinois. We're going to try and open up some from those key cities as well to have a physical location for customers to come to, have customers go, have some technician to show up on foot into their actual homes if they wanted to. And right now, what we're doing recently, which we just actually just started probably in the last couple of months, is expanding our remote support instead of just in the city. We've now keyed off of saying that we're doing it nationwide. And that is proved to be a big pivotal piece for us, because now we are working with a lot of aspects of our business on doing the remote support, and especially with the Office 365 migrations that have recently come up. And, you know, special thanks to Lisa Hendrickson with her ebook that she came out, because if it wasn't for her ebook and helping with that, you know, kind of guiding people to do remote support, because I don't believe there is an ebook right now out there that kind of helps you see how remote support is as where it stands right now. And that kind of helped us push us to the edge of engaging our remote support. And we do have a white label support that's helping us up with that portion of it as well. And, you know, just simple things of kind of taking a look at what your where your resources are going to, what have benefits you. Like, perfect example, we actually went to we were advertising a lot of our marketing budget went to a specific advertiser. It didn't yield us the results that we required. So we actually terminated our agreement with them. And now we've gone with another marketing agency that we're hoping that's going to push us to that direction where we want to do go to be recognized as a nationwide brand. But right now, what we're trying to do so that we don't grow too big, because, as you know, Mark Cuban even says on Shark Tank, you know, you can drown in opportunity. So we're trying to make sure that we can standardize everything first in these next couple quarters, so that if we do decide to make once we decide to make that big step, we're going to be ready for it. So, and again, that's building processes, meeting up people with our trade, seeing what things that they had ran into, and kind of educating ourselves a little bit better on a business aspect so that we can go ahead and bring them the great tech work that we already know that we can do.
Great. Wow. Well, those are some lofty goals. I definitely will say that. Yeah, you definitely. I think the thing with remote support is, you know, I was kind of a naysayer until, again, you know, I listened to Lisa and found out, you know, she was basically supporting a business pretty much 100% on remote support. There's still a couple things, and I'm just kind of in the learning phases of using remote support. I have found it where, you know, people have asked me a question and I'm able to remote into their computer and look at it and go, yeah, this is what's going on. And that's a great tool than trying to diagnose something over the phone.
Yep.
Now there are certain times that, you know, I know a lot of people do virus removals via remote support. And I know people are very profitable at it and people are very happy with their machines. The hard time I'm having is when I am working on a machine here in my office, I can feel the difference of when a machine is running good or when it's running bad. Well, depending on the internet connection on both sides,
yeah,
it's very hard to tell whether that machine is running actually better. Yeah, you might have cleaned the viruses and stuff like that, but I've just developed a feeling for how the machine actually is supposed to operate correctly. And if it's not, if it's lagging a little bit, then I know I got to go back in and do something else. And I'm not sure if, you know, I'm sure there's processes I can set in place that will eventually, you know, be able to take care of all that stuff. And I can be 100% sure that I'm doing the same job in my office as I would be doing a remote support session.
Gotcha. And that's a perfectly good point. There are going to be people that like you mentioned, Lisa, that's her bread and butter. Mm-hmm. She knows remote like the back of her hand. Me and you, me personally, I'm a hardware guy. I feel more comfortable with the machine in my possession, my hands on the machine, and actually seeing what's going on. Can I do remote support? Absolutely. But that's where you have to ask yourself, all right, am I wasting more of my time, or is my investment going to be better if I enroll in another individual to hire within the company or enroll with a different service to take care of that piece for me. Granted, yeah, you're kind of letting go the control of that because, you know, you don't know how the interaction is going to happen with the customer. But as you're growing as a business, if you're uncomfortable at something and you're not willing to spend the time or just it's one of those where you just can't get the hang of it. And by getting the hang of it, I don't mean as in you just can't understand what the situation is. It just is probably not a good fit for you. You just may it may not just be okay. It's just something that you will do, but you're not happy doing it. That's when you kind of, and again, this is when you go back to trying to reevaluate and standardize your processes. For me, I prefer to, because I have, in my business, I have a lot more hardware repairs than I do software repairs. So virus removals, remote defragging, office migration, things like that. I actually have more hardware repairs that come in, and I love that. I don't want to change that piece of my business, which is why I haven't closed down my proxy locations to just do remote support and software altogether, because there are people in my area that need this service. So what do I do? Do I just close off that remote portion and close off that avenue of potential revenue? No. If I can find it where I can invest in that, that's where I'm going to go ahead and put my key pieces in there. But by no means are you do you want to stretch yourself out where you can't dedicate a resource to it. So that's kind of one of those where you have to kind of take a look at it and see, you know, is this for me? And if it's not, figure out how you can make it, because if you believe it is a potential revenue maker for you, you just got to figure out how you can get that in there as well.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. Those are things that I believe you need to be a well-rounded business and have a little aspect of a little bit of everything. And, you know, and here's the thing, you know, Lisa can support hardware because she has people that either work with her as a contract worker or, you know, even work for her directly. And she can, you know, have those people go out on site and take care of things, which is awesome. And so she doesn't necessarily have to do the hardware, which, you know, obviously she doesn't enjoy. She enjoys the right. remote support. We can do the same types of things. We can outsource that remote support aspect of it and just keep the, you know, the hardware portion here in-house and, you know, be able to do that. And there's lots of different ways to do that. Now, when you're talking about your, you said you changed your pricing structure a little bit and you went from an hourly rate to a flat pricing rate. Now, in that, was that for everything? I mean, are we talking businesses, residential, or, you know, and you don't have to name prices, but what is it that you have actually done that you found is working for you right now?
Sure. The flat rate pricing is for residential only, because I feel that for them, that's kind of a better structure for them. I'm in the business of creating a better value for the customer. I'm not in it for the money. So if I can give a better solution or a better opportunity for that customer to get their computer or whatever service that they need done at a rate that they know upfront, I prefer that than them being uncomfortable with an open-ended bill and be over my shoulder or just kind of tasking on a lot of the things that I'm doing and cut me off. Because here's what we were running into. There were just, because before we were charging, and I can give this rate out, we were charging $75 an hour. And that was on site. And basically we had prepaid tickets and so forth. What was happening is we would have those customers where we told them the rate of an hour and you had the assumption that, okay, they're going to come in, stick a USB, clean it up, they're going to be done in the hour. Well, unfortunately, we don't do that because right. we want a better experience for the customer and we want the issue resolved right. And I'm pretty good about telling them exactly what's going to happen up front. You know, computer's down, et cetera. You know, it's really bad or it's corrupted. Hey, I don't know how long it's going to take me. It may take me an hour and a half, may take me 2.5 hours if you decide to nuke and pave, if you really wanted to do that route. But this is what we can do. So when it comes to that, or the fact of in their head, they're only going to do the hour. So they're going to, and I wouldn't say rush, but basically you're guiding them on what you're doing. And the moment that hour happens, boom, and they cut it off, they sign out, they're the first one to call back to say, hey, my problem's not resolved. Well, yeah, because you pretty much rushed my technician out as the dot hit the hour. So to avoid uncomfortability on both the technician and the customer side, we decided because – again, of the new software that we were able to discover and the new ways to make our technicians efficient, what we were able to do is we were able to lower the time on site and not give up the profit or revenue that our business could generate. And that's for residential. So because of that, that's when we, I think it was about a month ago or 2 months ago, we transitioned all of our residential rates from our flat rate hourly, all you can eat, to, hey, this is what services we offer. This is how much it will cost. And hey, you may get a little bit of a cheaper rate if you bring it into our one of our proxy locations. If you don't, hey, this is the flat rate file. So this is something, or flat rate fee. So this is something that if they don't have the money for it right now, they know what to save to so they can enroll in our services. And they prefer that versus having that open-ended bill. And then again, you never know. At the end of the bill, when you're ready to get paid, they may not have the money and you're both kind of in a bad situation. So that's kind of what we did on our residential side. Our business side, we do still charge hourly for the mere fact that it's never always one thing when you go into a business.
Right.
So to encompass that, we had to adjust our rates, which again, we're going to actually try and adjust our rates again for that reason, because we feel that the time that we're spending per hour there, we're not giving the best value to our technicians to be there on site. So,
gotcha. So when you're doing that, so have you figured out a way to basically do virus removals on site? To make it where it's worthwhile for you to do that on site, for the flat rate that you're getting paid for that.
Yep, exactly. So basically, and that took a lot of tinkering and tampering and just kind of figuring out what's going on from there. If we get to the point where, because basically for us, you know, the flat rate that we charge, that's about probably a little less than two hours of being on site if we were to calculate it with the hourly rate that we had before. So if it starts going past that 2 hour rate, then there's something wrong. Because again, this is part of that process that we mentioned where you have these checklists of what you want to do and they're all timed correctly. Now, our technician should be able to diagnose exactly what's going on for the first 15 minutes. First 15 minutes, they should be able to find out whether it's the computer slow, it's an internet issue, it's a hardware issue, et cetera. They should be able to figure out right then and there of what the issue is, slowness, internet, et cetera. Once they kind of have an idea, now again, there's going to be some times where they believe it's one idea, and then when they keep running through, there's going to be multiple issues as they go along. But for the time, like for example, if I go into a place and the laptop's really slow, you know, I use a certain program, I go ahead and run it through. Once I run that program, it'll tell me the specs. If the CPU is not hitting at 100%, I know that it's not a hardware issue. There's definitely something going on this machine that needs to be cleared out. And with the way that I have my automated system set up, should be done in 45 minutes to an hour, if that.
Okay, great. That's very cool. I'd definitely be interested to talk to you about how you're efficiently able to do that. And when we come back, I'm going to take a break here. When we come back, I'm going to talk about what I've done with my charging and how I've kind of changed my systems a little bit. But I just want to let you guys know that today's episode is brought to you by D72. It is the ultimate PC technician's repair tool designed to automate your daily workload and dramatically increase your efficiency and ultimately your bottom line, which is what Paco was talking about. D72 provides automation for system information gathering and custom reporting, virus and malware removal, Windows repair and comprehensive maintenance, basic tweaking and app installations, data backup. You can use, you can integrate your Fabs Auto backup in there and use that to do your backups very quickly. You don't ever have to leave the D72 app when you're in it. You can use all these tools right from the D72 app. You keep all your favorite tools updated, which I find invaluable because the one thing I always hated was updating the tools on my USB stick. Now I just hit one button or have it update automatically and right from my USB stick, and I'm ready to go for the day. You can keep your configurations and definitions synced to the cloud. So if you're doing remote work, you can download that little tiny little app, start it up. It'll download all your settings from the cloud, and you're ready to go. It also has integration with your PSA, CRM, or ticket tracking software. It also has new, simple, and descriptive interfaces for viewing and reacting to system alerts and also for running internal functions. It's very descriptive on what types of tools you're using, what they're used for, and maybe what kind of order and stuff you want to use them in. You can also build custom HTML reports with your pre-configured templates, customize apps or system alerts, which are automatically logged as you work within D7.2. And I found this feature very valuable as far as getting a report out that says exactly what I needed to say to show the customer, hey, here's the infections that you have, and here's what we've done to clean them up. And it'll also reorder all D7.2 functions, mixing and matching them with custom apps in your predefined auto mode routines. And that's great because you can put them in any order that works for you. And we all have different processes for doing virus malware removal or repairs. You can mix and match them, make it work exactly for your business the way that you want to do it. And Nick is always adding new features. D7.2, automate, relax, get paid. Head on over to foolishit.com and use offer code PODNUTS20. All right. So one of the price, so I've gone through a lot of pricing changes as I've, you know, as I've grown my business, and I'm trying to look at what's going to be beneficial to me. And here's what I figured out is a, you know, and I'm in a particular situation where I'm still a one man shop. So if I have to leave my domicile, which I hate, then it's me. So at this point, what I've done with my pricing is I do a flat rate pricing for most things if you bring it to me. So if you drop it off, it absolutely is a flat price or flat rate. If I have to go out on site, I will do a couple, do one or two things. If I go on site for business or residential at this point, it's $99 an hour. And what I'll do is I'll go out on site and I'll let them know. I said, here's the deal. Within 5 minutes, I should be able to figure out what is going on with that computer. No more than 10 minutes. And if I know that it's going to be something that's going to take me a little longer than an hour or so, anything longer than an hour, what I want to do is I want to give them the two options. And I tell them, listen, here's the two options. I can either take this back to my shop and I charge a $40 travel fee back and forth. I'll bring it back, set it up for you, plus the $89 flat rate for fixing, you know, XYZ, whatever it is. You know, most of the time it's going to be a virus removal or whatever. So in those situations, it'll be $129 flat for me to do that. Or I can sit here for the next 2 to 3 hours and you can pay me $99 an hour. Well, guess which one most people take?
They're going to take the flat rate, obviously.
Exactly. So yep. What I've done is I've protected myself from getting, because it's happened to me where I've gotten caught on site and run into, such ridiculous things. For example, I don't know if you guys remember Vista, but if you ever tried to install Service Pack 1 or Service Pack 2, it was nuts. Not only did it take forever to download, and I actually had them on a USB stick, so I didn't even have to download them. It took forever to install both those service packs, and you had to do one before the other. And it, I mean, yep, it was like 2-3 hours, you know. And so hindsight being 2020, what I should have done, started the installer, logged in from that computer right there, went home, you know, got your, you know, started my remote software up, went back home and just, you know, checked on it and ran it from there. That was definitely another option. But so to protect myself here, you know, that's the pricing structure that I came up with, so that I don't ever get caught on site. Because obviously, if I'm working on two or three machines, you know, I'm making more money than if I'm just working on one machine at a customer's house.
Right. And then keying off of, like you mentioned, with the Vista service packs, the worst was when you had an OEM, and I remember this time where it was a Toshiba laptop. I think it was actually my own, when I upgraded to Service Pack 1, and it would always download, complete the installation, and to the very end, and says that the Service Pack installation failed, and it was rolling back the updates. Yep. So finally, when you went to the OEM site, they weren't ready for the actual Service Pack.
Yep.
So that was a great finding after so many time, and like you mentioned, it took so long and so much wasted time to find out that the OEM just didn't support it at that time.
Yeah. And, you know, and one of the things I do carry on my USB stick is I have the WSUS updates that I keep updated, you know, at least once a month. They're all on my USB stick that I carry with me. So if I'm in fact on site and I do need to do some updates, instead of doing them from the Windows update site, I can stick that in, let it run, boom, and you know, so again, it goes back to figuring out what automation is going to work for you to cut that time down. Because if you've got it down to where you're saying, hey, I'm going to charge a flat rate and it's not going to, and no, most of the time it's not going to exceed 2 hours, I think that's phenomenal. That's great.
Yep. Yep. And again, like you mentioned, the WSUS updates, that is a free tool that's on Microsoft's site. So yep, if you haven't done that and you always travel with a USB or an external hard drive, download that application, click the updates one night, just let it run, and it's going to save you so much time, especially for those people that have a slower internet connection, such as DSL or the dreaded dial-up. This will save you a ton when you're doing that, because I know I had a client out in Hampshire, Illinois, and all that's out there is either dial-up or satellite, which is so expensive, and they just couldn't, and they had to choose the dial-up situation. And if you don't have a hotspot, which even then a hotspot's still kind of slow, the amount of time you're going to spend on site, and we're located probably a good hour to an hour and a half away from this client. And remote software is impossible, so you have to go on site. This tool will definitely help you and actually save you a lot of time for that. And again, it's one of those where, you know, you, a lot of these tools you don't have to pay for. And you know, a lot of people will say that, you know, you probably don't want to focus on free tools because they can always pull the rug under you. You know, I agree to that in a point, but I also disagree because there are a lot of these great tools that will help you advance your business so that you're in a position where you can invest a little bit more money to go through there. A perfect example, I use a product, Fabs Auto Backup. You know, that was probably the first software I ever actually paid for to invest in for the business. And I can't tell you how many times that has saved me so much time before I reformatted a machine or installed a new hard drive because that other drive just, you know, was put to the side or whatever the case. It has, you know, for Outlook PSTs, favorites, even through the wallpaper that was on the background, the amount of time that thing has saved you versus you doing it manually is amazing. And there's a lot of tools out there, again, to try and automate your process, but don't always think, as far as the technicians listening, is that you have to put up so much money to get some of these tools, because there's a lot of these amazing tools that you can help benefit your business now that are free for you, and they're available for you for that reason, because they're supposed to be a resource for you to use.
Yeah, and I will encourage people to do this, and I know it's something I'm definitely working on, is that a lot of these tools that we use and have been around for a long time and have kind of stood the test of time, you know, I would encourage people to, you know, donate a buck or two to these people that are developing this software. A lot of them do it because they have a passion for, you know, making these types of tools, or they actually need them in their business. And because of that, they've designed these tools to kind of help them in their own businesses, but they're willing to share it for free for most of us. So a lot of these tools, if there's a little donate button, you know, what's it? Hey, open up your PayPal account and, you know, send them a buck or two and, you know, kind of help them out, give them, you know, kind of a little thanks in a monetary way to, you know, so that they know they're appreciated for the products that we use each and every day.
Yep, and I have to agree with that. And it's not only so much the software. There's again, there's so many communities out there that are bringing a lot of this information to you for free. Again, the Podnuts Network. You know, I have to say that I think I have become a better technician. And I've said this in the last couple shows I've been on this network, and I actually do feel honored being on it on these shows. Is I am a better technician from listening to these podcasts for the past 3 months than I have in the 15 years that I've been in business. Let me rephrase that, and me being in the industry. So, you know, again, anything you can do for these type of communities and that they're providing you this information and these great resources for free, absolutely, you need to support these businesses. Again, like Podnuts has their Amazon link, they have, you know, for donation, things of that nature. You know, show the support, because again, like me, I would not be where I'm at now because of the Podnuts Network.
I appreciate that. That's, yeah, the Podnuts Network is has been a lifesaver to me for a long time, because I always learn something from every technician. And even hosting the show now, I still learn things that I'm like going, I didn't even think about that. That's absolutely something new. I'm like, let me try that in my own business. So that's why I love doing these shows. Okay, so All right. So what else have we, what other things are you changing in your business right now that, that you think would benefit somebody out there, or just kind of what's your thought process on, you know, some of the other things that you might be changing?
Gotcha. Other than kind of the pivotal pieces of we're trying to rebrand ourselves. So we have an amazing graphic designer right now that's kind of rebranding our logo. Our logo previously was modeled toward an ideal for our business. And we had basically, it's more of a like of mine when I was younger, and it helped model that toward that. But unfortunately, that our original logo could be conceived as being that item that what could be concerned with. So, to avoid legalities, what we've done is decided to rebrand ourselves. If we do decide to take ourselves nationwide later, like I mentioned before, I have our graphic designer rebranding ourselves, and we're working with a marketing agency, as we mentioned before, to kind of revamp our website as well. We did our website in-house, primarily myself or our previous VP of marketing that was with us, and he's actually in another position right now. So it was kind of hard to maintain. So it was one of those where, do I take out the time for myself to invest on our website, or do I invest the resources that we could possibly have that we seem to have had from the previous years and invest this to it? Saves me those couple hours every night to try and invest on that website. So we're currently working through that process right now. And again, a lot of people, you know, they'll say, you know, hey, it's too expensive to put up a website. I mean, there's a lot of free resources out there that you can put up a website, especially with the tech site builder that's on the PodNuts community as well. I mean, it's a great value to help invest yourself, because if you're not online, you're not going to be noticed. And it's a big thing where, you know, and a lot of things like Jorge was saying is making yourself known. Take advantage of a lot of these resources that are available for you, such as, you know, Google Maps, Yahoo, Bing, you know, a lot of those aspects of that as well. So as far as us, we're working on the rebranding to kind of get ourselves better known, because we feel that we've gotten a good footprint on where we're at. We're just aspiring to kind of get a little bit known a lot further and a lot more out where we're at right now.
Gotcha. Yeah, there are definitely a lot of free resources, and there definitely are paid for resources. You know, I run my business completely on Google AdWords and a website. You know, there is word of mouth. After I've, you know, created, you know, after I've gotten customers to come to my location, or, you know, I've traveled to their homes or whatever, there is a lot of word of mouth from that, but I still primarily get most of my business from Google AdWords. And, you know, a lot of people have said, I can't make this work. I can't make that work. And I'll tell you guys right now that my cost per click, well, let me tell you what my threshold for cost per click is, like $4 and something. Now, I've heard people say, I can't compete unless I have it at the $6 or $7 range. And I'm going to tell you right now, that's baloney. And the reason I say that is because I've been working with Google AdWords ever since Steve Cherubino brought it to me in the first tech site builder. I just started it up, had a $100 coupon, gave it a shot. I tweaked it for that first year and just tweaked it and tweaked it and tweaked it and finally got a better understanding of it. And guess what? Now I'm in year 2 and 3 and 4, and I've even tweaked it even more and gotten it kind of down to an area where it's not costing me a whole lot of money. But here's the thing, even when it does cost me a lot of money, I'm usually getting more customers. So right now my cost per click is right around $3.33, I believe is what it's at right now. And that's just average over time. And here's the thing that does for me, and I am in a local area that has about 93,000 people. And what that does is that will put me usually in the top spot anytime somebody does a search for computer repair. So I'm usually the very first ad. Now, there's a lot of SEO that went into that. And here's the thing. It was not gamed SEO. It was all organic. Just the things that I do online, things like this, being a guest on these types of shows, all this kind of information goes out there. And then with the tech site builder too, there's some SEO built into the back end of that that points people to my site. Organically, I'm coming up right near the top, right underneath my biggest competitor, a brick and mortar shop right in the area. So organically, nice. I'm coming right there, and I've done nothing other than, you know, basically put myself out there, do Google AdWords, you know, have good information, have new information, those types of things, you know, kind of be, you know, tweaking things. So you definitely have to use something to get yourself out there. And I'm not saying that's the only way to do it. You know, some people have had good luck with the yellow book and in different things, but this is what I've grown my business on. Well, it depends on your area, I guess. But this is what I've grown.
Concur.
Yeah. This is what I've grown my business on since 2010. And it's the only revenue. It's the only way that people get to me now. You know, I've raised some of my prices, so I will, you know, I'll get some phone calls and, you know, maybe some people won't, you know, they'll say, well, that's too expensive or whatever, but that's fine. But the amount of work I'm getting is actually producing me more money than the amount of work I was getting before. And I was making less, if that makes sense.
Yep. And that actually segues into two points, like you just mentioned. The first one is, and I was a big offender of this, where if I got a call and I told them my price and they basically told me, oh, that's too expensive, you know, I'm going to go somewhere else, thank you. You know, I used to take that not personally, but to the point where I thought to myself, man, am I really charging that much more? Am I really more expensive than what it is? So if you have done the research and kind of looked at your area to see what everybody is charging, and I'm not talking about the big box stores that are around you too, because we will never be able to compete with that, at least right now, once starting up. But being able to look at the other shops that are nearby you and being able to key off of that great customer service and that quality of work that you're going to do, if you're around in that area, don't sting away from your pricing. I mean, you made your pricing to the point of where you believe you think it's a very fair value, stick with it. And the people will come, like Jeff said, you know, like you mentioned, those are going to be the customers that you probably are glad you didn't get, because they're probably going to just weigh down so much on you to the point where you wish you did charge that much more money for that, you know. And I'm going through that right now with a business client where, you know, my original business rate, I feel that I'm not charging enough for that business rate to deal with that amount of activity that's occurring. So the question, so if I raise my rates, two things are going to happen. Either A, they're going to say, hey, great, no problem, I'll go ahead and pay your rate, and it's going to be worth it to me for that aspect of it. Or they may go away. And if they go away, that's less stress that I have to deal with. The other part of that it segue is, there's been a lot of information that we've talked about today. And I know a lot of technicians are just probably going to think, well, where do I start? Where can I go from here? There is a free resource available for you from the SBA.gov, and I'm not sure if anybody knows who the SBA is. It's the Small Business Administration. This is the United States government specifically for small businesses, and there's an organization that is with this administration called SCORE, and it's called SCORE.org, and they are available, from my understanding, throughout the United States, and these are free mentors in everything from how to start your business to getting or reevaluating yourself, how to get yourself a little bit better. And these are people, you know, these are people that were in the industry, trained in the actual business world and have retired and are now dedicating their time to help startups and other members of us to move forward as well. So this may be a great opportunity to see if there is a location that's near you, and you may want to talk to a mentor on figuring out where should you start? Where do you want to go from here? Whether you're just starting out and thinking about starting a business, whether you're a startup, or you're in the middle and you're trying to move on to that next step, this would be a great opportunity for you to kind of take a look and see what resources, you know, the Small Business Administration, SCORE, have available from, you know, our own United States.
Oh, those are great resources. And I'll tell you what, if you could send me some links for those, that would be great. And I'll definitely add them in the show notes for everybody. Yep. So yeah, because I wasn't even aware that there was any organizations like that you could actually take part in. So that's yep. Great. Great. That's a great tip, man. Awesome. So is there anything else at this point is there anything you've been working on that, I know we were talking about a computer you're working on, anything that, you may or may not have solved that's kind of a head scratcher, or just kind of, you know, what things have really been coming in your shop lately?
Recently have been a lot of hardware issues that have, for some reason, have allowed us to understand that our processes are a little bit incomplete.
okay.
And the way that we, and the reason why I say that is because there have been times where, so for example, we had a couple computers, two of them that came in at the same time, where we, they were reported to be a power supply issue. We had our ultra power supply tester. We ran them both. All the LEDs ran great, perfect, good. Hey, we're good to go. And we figured, okay, it's not powering on. It's got to be a board issue. Replace the boards, plug it back on. Power supply did not go on. So it's one of those where, depending on the tool that you have, some tools are a little bit more better than others. Sometimes there's just different processes of what you have to do. A buddy of mine, same situation happened to him. He doesn't have that real expensive power supply tester. What does he do? He grabs a good power supply, sticks it in, plug it in, see if it powers on. That type of quick, cheap trick could have saved us not only time, but could have also saved the customer a lot of money up front. So obviously we did right by the customer and let them know that once we realized our mistake, we let them know that it was the power supply, refunded them their the portion, because we have different rates for, you know, a motherboard replacement versus a power supply replacement. It's a lot cheaper to replace the power supply, refund them the money, you know, apologize for the time wasted. And, you know, and actually one of them is actually we secured their Illinois branch for the business because of that honesty and just the way that we went out of our way to help them out. So that was one part for that. Another one that we're running into is the UEFI BIOS. A lot of the new motherboards that are coming in for these secure boots, we had a better understanding of them previously, but just some of them, like, you know, and me and you were talking before the show, where I have one now that the recovery medium that they provided to the customer just is not running for whatever reason. And it's a real head scratcher to the point where we're trying to figure out. At first when we ran scans, we thought it was the hard drive. Replaced the hard drive, it's still kind of doing the same thing. So there's a couple other items that we're trying to research, and we've talked to their support to help better us, give us a couple solutions. So we're looking forward to trying getting ourselves to kind of understand that BIOS a little bit better, since it's so new. We're just trying to get ahead of the curve so that, you know, no more new curveballs get thrown at us about those BIOS.
Yeah, I think we're definitely in a learning phase. And I'll say this about the power supply testers. They're a good base to go ahead and check, but they're pretty much junk. And I don't even know if there's any, to be honest with you, if there's any expensive ones that actually work any better than the cheap ones. I have one. I use it every once in a while. But here's the thing. It's $20 to $30 for a 500-watt power supply. I keep one to two of them around at all times. I'll pull one out of a box and replace that power supply just to see if that's working. And here's the thing. A lot of people go, that's a lot to go through. Here's what I figured out is I don't even, all I do is unplug the pins. I leave the power supply in there. I set the power supply next to the computer with it open or whatever. I plug it in, plug it in the wall, turn it on, start it up. If it works, yep, great, power supply. Now I just replace it. It saves me so much in trying to figure out what in the world I'm going to do. So there's definitely different ways of doing things to make it more efficient. And then the other thing you were talking about was the UEFI BIOS or UEFI.
I like UEFI better.
Yeah, so. UEFI. It sounds funny. So the UEFI BIOS, it's one of those things that I think we're all on a learning curve right now, because in the past, we haven't had to deal with it. We're getting a lot more Windows 8 machines in now. I'm seeing a lot more of them than I've seen in the past. And it's just the uptick has just started. One of the things I've learned is you can go back to a legacy BIOS. There is a way to do that. And basically, if you see the start or the power off button, if you click on that and you hold the, I believe it's a shift key, and hit it and go ahead and restart, you can go into all your background processes. And what's cool about it, it's just the same as you've got your HP diagnostic tools, you've got your Dell diagnostic tools, everything will be right in there that you can either run your hardware scans and do a diagnostic on it. You can go back to the legacy BIOS. You can, set it up to boot from a USB. There's a lot of different things you can do. There's a lot of power in that system. It's just you have to learn to do things a little bit differently than what you were doing in the past. With a lot of the newer Windows 7 machines, before we went to Windows 8, a lot of them, in the past, if you wanted to boot from a CD-ROM, you actually had to go and change that in the BIOS. Well, the later BIOSes towards the end of life of, you know, Windows 7 before they moved to Windows 8, a lot of them were automated. So if you had a USB stick plugged in, it would recognize it and would try to boot from the USB. If you had a CD-ROM plugged in, it would automatically launch and run from that CD-ROM. So there's always going to be changes in the system, and it's just something we got to grow with and get better at. And it, I know the other thing I've figured out how to do is I figured out how to load Windows without a key. And basically I would take my USB stick and load the ISO on the USB stick. And once I do that, I will take a EI.cfg. It's a config file in, you know, Notepad or Notepad Plus or whatever. And basically I will put the whatever version I need, whether it be Core or Pro or 64-bit or whatever. And you can look this up online. And basically you put that in the file system where you have the rest of the files. And when you go to load it, it's just going to load that one. It's not going to ask for the key for Windows 8. So
nice.
And then once you get in, you can load the regular key from the system. And a lot of times it will just, if it's an HP or whatever, and you're going back to the regular media, it will, you know, it'll authenticate no problem. So I'm sure that's not going to be, it's not going to work like that every time. I've been able to get it to work in the past, but I'm sure there's going to be different systems and different things we're going to have to learn to basically get around. I know there was a way to make an all-in-one CD or an all-in-one USB stick with all the versions of Windows 8 on it. I personally have not been able to do that as of yet. So, I've messed with some of the different systems to try to get it to work. I have not done one. So, if somebody has that out there, you know, let me know. And, I'd like to get a copy.
Yeah. Same thing here. I was able to do it with Windows 7, but yep. For Windows 8, I just have not been successful to get all the versions in one.
So, but yeah, with that information out there, hopefully, you know, maybe somebody can help out with that. It's never, like I said, it's never been a huge issue. I've either been able to use OEM software, or I've used the recovery partitions on, you know, some of these systems. So it hasn't been a huge thing yet, but I know it's going to come, and I'm going to need to have some of those things in place so that I can do them a little bit better, a little more efficiently.
Yep, absolutely.
So, is there anything else that we wanted to cover? Anything you can think of?
Okay. I think we got a lot of good content here.
Okay, great. Sounds good. Yeah, I appreciate you coming back on and sharing with us. And if people wanted to find you and get in touch with you, what would be the best way to do that?
Yeah, you can always shoot me an email at paco@prodigytext.com. And that's Prodigy Text. Text is with a K, T-E-K-S, and .com. Or you can feel free to find me on Twitter. It's Shy Text, C-H-I-T-E-K-C-E-O. So Shy Text CEO on Twitter.
Awesome. Great. Well, you guys can also find me on the Google Plus at Jeffrey Halish or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, guys, we would be more than happy to entertain any emails. Please send us some emails and we'll read them on a show and answer them. Please email me at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. And if you want to leave a voicemail, we'll play the voicemail on the show. Same as the emails. And that number is 1-888-697-0162. And I want to thank our sponsors, Instant House Call and D72, for this episode of Podnuts Daily. And don't forget, if you need business paperwork to get you started in your computer repair business, then check out the link for the TechNibble Computer Business Kit over at podnuts.com. It's on the left-hand side. Click on that link. That helps us out a little bit. And it's a great kit to get you started in your business. And guys, do us a favor. We haven't had one in a long time. If you could, please leave us a rating and review over on iTunes, and that'll help make people more aware of what we're doing over here and let other, you know, techs benefit from the information we're bringing. You guys can also help support the Podnuts Network. The next time you're shopping at Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon, especially now it's getting close to Christmas. And I don't know about you guys, but I do most of my shopping on Amazon, so I don't have to leave my home. So that doesn't change your price at all, guys. It just helps put a little change in the pockets of the Podnuts Network to bring you these great shows. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily.
Hi, folks. Lisa here from Call That Girl's Remote Support Show. Did you know that I have a brand spanking new show coming out called Call That Girl's Office 365 Show? You can check it out right here on the Podnuts Network by going to podnuts.com/CTG. Listen to all of my day-to-day problems and solutions I have with Outlook, third-party apps, and Office 365.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.